And therefore, no matter how great your teacher is, it ultimately boils down to how you do your sadhana. It's your faith, it's your dedication, it's your diligence with your practice is what will make you as a yogi.
Welcome to a Curious Yogi podcast. I'm your host, Bobby, joined by living masters and awakening friends. We're here to illuminate your practice as we explore what it means to walk the yogi's path, to unfold peace from within, and to live the vision of oneness. I'm so delighted you're here. Now let's get curious. All right. I am back. Episode 22, season 3. I actually unintentionally created seasons of this show, this little podcast project, but I'm actually so glad I did because it's good to take breaks. It's good to find full circle to take a step away and then return back with fresh eyes. So this is the last episode of season 3. I am gonna do a little recap episode in February, just sharing a few of my favorite moments, a few of my favorite takeaways from the past 10 months that we've been doing this season. So, for everybody that's joined, for listening, for downloading, for reviewing, for sharing, biggest shout out to the Patreon members for really showing up for the satsang. It's been so delightful to just spend that 1 hour a month together digging into our own sadhana and the way that the show and the guests and the wisdom has impacted the personal practice. And also, of course, for helping to support me with the few costs that it takes to have a podcast. So I appreciate each and every one of you for your support, your generosity, and just that we can walk this path together. So if you haven't already checked out the Patreon page, you can do so at patreon.com/acuriousyogipodcast. And I have to say this one final time. I still have one spot available for the Yoga Sadhana Retreat Himalaya, which is happening March 23rd. So if you've been thinking about exploring the Himalayas of northern India and going deep into your sadhana, this could be your call. So hit me up if you're interested. Otherwise, it's looking like we'll be taking a group next year. So drop me a note, I'll put you on the wait list. And with that, I am so excited to share this great, light, illuminating conversation with the ever generous, the one and only Prasad Rangnekar. He's been on the show, this is the third time now, and you may know him from his popular Instagram account. And he just has so much wisdom under his belt that he delivers in digestible, relatable nuggets. There are so many one-liners in this episode. Like we could just have like a line of t-shirts that's like Prasad one-liners, which if you've seen him around, you know he does wear pretty cool one-liner t-shirts. So maybe I should propose that to him. But today with the conversation, my intention was to get deep, and we definitely hit that. We discussed the real purpose behind spiritual work and the willingness to actually approach it with commitment and faith and dedication and do the hard work, and yet have that sense of natural ease, natural flow, natural effort. Effortless growth that happens on this path. So the conversation left me remembering that this is a long game. Sure, the short wins may come from time to time, but there are no shortcuts to refining this mind and realizing the truth of who we are. So I'm going to leave you with this last brilliant episode, beautiful conversation. I hope you enjoy it. Let me know what you think. Your reviews, your comments, your shares, I read each and every one of them, and they mean so much to me and to the guests. I love sharing your little emails. I love sharing your reviews with the guests that come on this show, especially because lots of these guests are, they're not celebrities. They're not even teachers. They're just sharing their personal practice. And I think that's what makes it so special when I get to share your feedback. So let me know what you think. And I just know you're going to love this conversation. And I can't wait to share about it and talk about it at the next monthly satsang, which is happening on the first Sunday of each month. So I hope to see you there. Big hugs to everybody and see you on the other side. Good to be back with you. Welcome back, Prasad,
Thank you.
to
Thank you.
Curious Yogi Podcast. This is now the third season that I've been doing this podcast, and the last two seasons you came on, and the episodes obviously wildly popular amongst the like top rated stats, when I go and look at the stats. So
Okay, thank you.
personally, I love to spend time with you, even though I've never met you in person. I'm like, yes, I gotta just like hang with Prasad for an hour and
Please,
like
please.
have satsang, Like that's like, that like fills me up. And then also, obviously, people are getting so much value. So I'm super thankful to just get to spend a little
Thank
time
you
with
for having me. Thank you for having me.
Super great. And yeah, like the last couple of episodes, and even, I know you talk on a lot of podcasts, we've had the conversation about yogasana and Western yoga as like an extract. We've had the kind of conversation about that. So, when I was thinking, like, what should we talk about today? Like, where can we put our attention in our conversation? Like, something that I love about the way that you share the wisdom is highlighting the inner experience, the self-inquiry, the stillness, the meditation. And of course, like you said before, like, yes, you did asana, you do pranayama. And like, even I love that one post a while back where you shared about like weightlifting. I also love weightlifting. And it's like, but when we actually think about the broader lens of yoga as a vast system, like what can we talk? I really want to get into the depth of it today. Like, what does it mean to live not only like a yogic life, but a life with awareness and joy through the lens of the vast yoga philosophy? Let's like get into the like bread and butter of the teachings today. How do you feel about that?
Absolutely. I'm open to talking about anything. Bread and butter about what you asked. If I have to summarize the whole of yoga or the practice of yoga in one word or one sentence, it'll be refinement of the mind. Doing what you're doing. Not trying to do something exceptional or out of the box, but doing what you're doing, doing what comes to you, doing what you're supposed to do. The technical term for that is dharma. And whilst living your dharma or practicing your dharma, refining your mind to realize who is that self. Who is that owner of the agency behind the sense of identity? Who is it that's doing the doing? That would be the crux for me, at least.
And when you speak about Dharma, like I'm kind of thinking, I always like I have this kind of devil on my shoulder always that's going, yeah, but what about this? Like when we think about refining the mind, living our Dharma, living, can we say, our purposeful life, like what we are meant to be doing. and refining the mind. It's like, what comes first, the chicken or the egg? Like, does one have to kind of know that they're on their dharmic path, like living, they're on their kind of life's purpose to then start refining the mind? Or does, like, what is that process? Or is it just unique for each and every being based on what the karma is?
One doesn't need to know initially, at least, but one just does what comes to them. Like it doesn't really have to be so flowery. Yeah,
Yeah,
I
people
mean,
love the flowers though, the fluff and
yeah, I mean, it's okay if people love. I
the
mean, but you know. It's good to have that romanticized view of yoga, but for me at least, and historically as well, yoga is extremely practical and pragmatic. So what I'm trying to say is here dharma means whatever you ought to do, you do. Like if you are a parent, you take care of the child. There's nothing exceptional about it. If you are a yoga teacher, if you've done your teacher training, then teach. You are a human, be good to each other. So no heavenly deity has to come and tell you or teach you dharma. It is, for me at least, it's common sense. You do no harm, it's common sense. So one may not be aware that they are living a purpose or doing their dharma, but many simple-minded people, they just do what they are ought to do, and that's it. But the yogi, a yoga seeker or a practitioner, what the yogi does is the yogi does what they ought to do. And in the doing, they refine the mind, as in calm down the mind, gain clarity, gain understanding. Because there are two modes of doing things. One is doing things mechanically, where you just do things and nothing is learned from the lived experience. And the other end, or other hand, you can say doing things consciously, where every project, every action has a reaction, and through that reaction, through the consequence, we derive some kind of learning. A yogi is the latter part. A yogi does actions consciously. That's why in Bhagavad Gita, there is a shloka called which says, Yoginah Karma Kurvanti Sangham Tyaktva Atma Shuddhayet. A yogi does their action only to refine the mind. And this is, I would say, the be all and end all of actual yogic process. You just do what you ought to do, and in that doing, you find yourself. So I don't see yoga as something extraordinary, some occult practice, and it just, I mean, that has always been. I mean, the Upanishadic seers were extraordinary in their mental expanse and intellect and all those qualities, but they were family people with children, doing their regular stuff. So long answer to your short question.
It's like that I think it's a what's his Jack Kornfield has that book. I haven't read it, but I just love the title. First ecstasy, then the laundry. Like, can we work to find that refinement, that simplifying of the mind? I guess it's a simple, you're saying refine the mind, and as we refine the mind, naturally it seems that life would become more simple, more refined, more subtle. So that we go doing, like you say, be a parent, be a yoga teacher, be whatever it is you're meant to do, without this kind of need for everything to be purposeful and joyful and grand and delightful. That, like, even in the so-called suffering times or the uneasy times or the challenging times, that refined mind or that refined mind then allows the space, which holds all experience, to kind of shine through the lens of the yogi's vision.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's the goal. Yoga Sutra or the commentary on Yoga Sutra would call it ekagra chitta, a one-pointed mind. A one-pointed mind is not one-pointed in the sense of anxiously focused. It's calmly focused and centered. And such a mind is extremely, it's filled with potential.
What, like, okay, when we think of that potential, what, you know, as again, the devil's advocate, what do we say or what do we experience for ourselves when we can start to cultivate that within our own practice, within our own spiritual practice that does happen in the privacy of our own heart, in the stillness of our own experience, which, you know, we have to make the conscious choice to create the environments around us, which can help support that inner stillness. But what do we say or experience or do in the times when we are faced with, say, you know, the sense that we need to act in a way that doesn't feel yogic, whether it be on a small level, like sort of defending your boundaries, or on a larger level, like protesting or advocating against suffering or oppression? You know, like, I see for myself in my own practice that yes, the refinement is happening within, and yet there's still some kind of, you know, I guess it's where I am in my own process, some kind of resistance or like friction that comes when there's a dealing outward with the world, that it's kind of, it makes the mind's wires get fritz, because it's just hard to believe the way that some things are expressed in life. And yet I have the awareness that everything arises from the same source. It's all God expressed, whether I experience or perceive something as negative or positive, right or wrong. So I'm not sure if that was really clear, but how do we take that refined mind, that still inner being, and move outward?
First of all, we need to understand that we are a participant in the ecosystem of variables, which we call as reality. Okay? Because your question is extremely profound, I will go bit by bit. Okay? I understood your question.
Okay.
I understood your question, but now I have to see how to break down the answer in simple parts. So, number one, you have spoken about an individual, and that individual's reaction to the stimulation triggers from the society or the world. So we as an individual are an integral part of the world. So no man is an island, as they say, you know. So we are always under an impact from external variables, may it be our partner, our government, the taxation, ecological crisis. So we are co-creators. We are not living in a silo. We are always impacted and intersected by different variables. So whatever we do will have an impact on the world, and whatever the world does will have impact on us. If the world is going off the rails, then it is obvious that that chaos will create reverberations in our mind and displace our mind. That is what is happening these days. But this is what has been happening all the time. For example, the nature of the world is impermanent. The nature of the world is suffering giving. Buddhism says this. Bhagavad Gita talks about it. Krishna calls the empirical world Dukkhalaya, the house of suffering, the habitation of suffering. So, the world that we inhabit will always be challenging, has always been challenging, and is challenging. So nobody is denying the fact. For example, even after so-called self-realization, the saints, mystics, yogis have suffered. So there is no guarantee per se that suffering for you will end as such through yoga. But your management and resilience to suffering will definitely reduce. This is an important aspect that we need to understand. And once that is clear, once you recognize yourself as an integral part of the society, then you involve yourself in the actions of the world or don't involve. See, there's no rule per se. For example, there have been yogis who have been active in India's freedom struggle against the British. They were spiritual people. But then for them, the dharma became to give freedom to their, bring freedom for their country. Whilst there were other yogis who consciously chose to isolate themselves, move away, and focus on themselves. Now, both kind of yogis have inspired the generation, but inspired in different way. So there is no formula, there is no toolkit which will tell you, okay, once you reach this state, you have to help others. Once you reach this state, you have to retreat. Once you reach this state, you can again come out and help others. There is no playbook. And one doesn't require a playbook. Once you come to a spiritual clarity that I have to do what I have to do. Now, that spiritual clarity, the technical term for this is viveka. Okay. Viveka means clear discernment. Shuddha viveka. A clear discernment. And then everybody like, Bobby, why are you doing this? No, this is what I have to do. Okay, but again, this clear discrimination or discernment comes from a very, very peaceful point of your mind. It's not like, I have to do this, otherwise. No, there's no otherwise. It's kind of love, you know. Like somebody asks, why did you fall in love with that guy? I don't know. I just love him. That kind of, you know. There's no like, I ticked these four boxes and, you know, he looks like a green flag, so therefore I fell in love. It's not like that. So what I'm talking about is when you refine your mind, you reach that sense of clarity from where you do whatever you have to do or whatever you ought to do without any anxiety, without any doubt. Self-clarity is extremely important over here. And in that moment of self-clarity, purpose reveals itself. Till then, whatever we call purpose, actually is just a goal. We say it's my purpose, but it's just a goal. It's nothing, it's not wrong. But a time comes when your mind is refined, when your mind is centered, and just purpose just dawns upon you. It's not a plan. When purpose dawns upon you, the road is just cleared for you.
I was gonna say, I think this is a perfect time that we're having this conversation now at the beginning of the year, when so much priority is put on resolutions and intentions and things, which have their place. But from this standpoint, I love like clarifying, like, it's not linear, first of all, like you're saying,
correct.
it's not
Absolutely.
One step, and that there is no playbook. Which I love in one sense, because it does bring a sense of freedom, like, you know, like that we don't have to compare to anybody else's experience and this and that. And yet we have this kind of frameworks or these teachings or concepts like viveka, like to think about, okay, how do I practice that discernment in my meditation practice, discerning between the mind, which is changing, the self, which is unchanging, and how do I use that clarity, that brilliance of the discernment in real life, like, or in day-to-day
beautiful,
life. It's like
beautiful.
that is kind of like, if we talk about refining the mind and simplifying the mind, like that's the kind of most beautiful way to move, like, into any day, or like, you know, this grand goal I have to reach there. But actually, if it's just be with myself, find that clarity of discerning between what's what, Then life will, like you say, dawn. What a beautiful way to think about it. Also, then it takes away that kind of doing, that doership, that forcing, like, oh, that's a grind to be canoeing upstream. Like,
Absolutely.
just let the current turn the boat around, and just go down the
Absolutely.
river.
Beautifully, beautifully described. Exactly. It's effortless.
But we kind of have to get out of our own way for that effortless space to bubble up. It's there, but sort of clear the mirror so this light can shine through. What?
That's difficult.
Yeah.
That is challenging. That is challenging. It's like success. You can be successful, yeah, but nobody tells you the amount of work that is needed to be successful, kind of, Everybody wants to be successful, but not many want to put in the work. It's really like that. And that is called tapasya. The technical term for that is tapasya. Everybody wants the siddhis, accomplishments, but nobody wants to do the tapasya. Nobody wants to go through the rigor and have the vigor to go through the burning to reach that state.
Especially the work that the world doesn't really celebrate. We don't really live in a world that's like, go into your silent space and churn with your own self and inquire into who you are, which is like, looks like you're doing nothing,
Yeah, but what doesn't celebrate, which I agree with, but I don't know why the world should celebrate. I mean, world was not made to validate everybody. You see, I mean, if we say world, a synonym for the world would be masses. And masses are not at all interested in the topic that we are discussing. What we are discussing will be interesting for 5% of the masses, out of which 1% would really follow through, like, wow, get that wonder, get curious to explore more. This has always been the ratio. It's that, So I don't think, honestly, after a point, a yoga seeker should just stop seeking validation from others. And that happens. If the sadhana is strong enough, you just stop seeking validation from anybody. It's just between you and your guru. That's it. A god or whatever you call it, So I don't think world is your cheerleader. World is just an audience. World is not cheering for you. Word is just looking at you.
Like going back to tapasya, I think it's also, well, for me anyway, it's important to remember, like we said before, that it's not everything is in, peace and love and rainbows and breezy, breezy kind of journey. Like there has to be that, like, well, I'm curious what you're going to say to this. Like, the two tracks that we have to do the work, like we're saying. Churn through the tapasya, let that friction build something or rub something so that the awareness can become illuminated. And yet there is that letting go of the rowing up the water and letting the dawn, the awareness dawn. So it's like we're holding these two kind of truths. Would you
Yeah,
say what?
that's why Patanjali calls it Abhyasa and Vairagya. You are absolutely right. Not just Patanjali. Sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita also talks about it. When Arjuna asks Krishna, mind is extremely difficult to regulate. It's as if, you're trying to hold wind in your hand. Krishna agrees with him. Krishna says, yes, I mean, mind is difficult to regulate, but it can be regulated through abhyasa and vairagya. What you spoke about, abhyasa means doing the work. Yeah, just putting in the energy. Success, failure, good, bad, happy, sad, just passing through the churn. And the other is, as you pass through the churning, one by one, one by one, just detached from certain attitudes, aspects, variables of your life that are limiting you. These both have to go hand in hand. Otherwise, you'll be like bird with just one wing. It will not fly much.
Yeah, I like the analogy of the bird. My guru, he said that the bird of sadhana, one wing is viveka, one wing is vairagya, and the tail is abhyasa. So we kind of need to
Beautiful.
have these kind of, I don't even want to say practices, because to me, like viveka and vairagya, and well, abhyasa is a practice. I kind of get that. But the other two kind of feel like a state of being, like just being dispassionate or non-attached, kind of having that sense within you, as well as that sense of discernment, being able to clearly decipher and discriminate between what's what. Like,
Correct.
are those practices as well? Like, would you
Yeah,
say
they
that
are
we
practices.
practice, like we,
Yes.
how does one practice those?
Yeah, I mean, your guru is right, and I totally understand his analogy because that's why it is a wing. That's why he said it's a wing. He did not say it's a rudder of the tail. It's a wing. You have to move the wing to modulate the wind currents, and it takes effort. For example, if we assume vairagya means detachment, detachment needs to be practiced every moment of your life.
Is it like first you're attached? Because it's like I you can see attachment coming, so then it's the that's the Vairagya.
Yeah, I mean, we are already attached heavily.
Yeah,
The
to this.
difficulty for a seeker is recognizing the how much I'm attached. I mean, self-guilt and self-loathing happens just by recognizing the fact that, as you become awakened to your own personality, you realize, oh my goodness, I'm attached to such silly things. And yet I know they are silly, and yet I'm attached to my needs and my fancies and my fantasies. And then the process of detachment starts, and it's difficult because you may want to detach, but there is this impulse in your head. There's a wiring that doesn't let you detach. That's why it is a practice. There is an effort, you detach, but then you can't, and then you go back and then you can't, and back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. It's all about the back and forth. That is tapasya. That is tapasya. But a time comes when detachment comes easy. And that happens through practice. Just like learning to drive, or whatever, doing asana or pranayama. The first pranayama class, you're huffing and puffing. After a while, the breath flows smoothly. It is practice. Abhyasa and vairagya. Actually, vairagya is also abhyasa. It's a abhyasa of vairagya. It's a practice of vairagya. But a time comes when it becomes very natural, very, very organic.
And I guess, yeah, it's like remembering that kind of, it's a slow, like, it's putting the coins in the bank little by little by little. And we might see the fruits in 1 year, 10 years, 50 years. Who knows if we don't even, but it's like just to keep taking the, doing the practice, I guess. And when you
Absolutely.
were,
That's the definition of Patanjali. That's Patanjali's definition of abhyasa. Dirghakalainantar means something that is practiced over a long period of time. Dirghakal, long period of time.
And when you were speaking, I was thinking kind of like about, if we look at the journey that Arjuna takes in the Bhagavad Gita, at least in the small part that we read as, as a mainstream, how it's like Krishna is helping Arjuna kind of get out of this like psychological kind of turmoil and refining the mind, expanding the awareness until like finally in chapter 18, he's like, okay, I see what you mean now. Like, and then he has built that capacity to then transcend even the mind and to sort of reach that state in which Krishna is kind of saying the whole time, but yet at the same time, he's almost kind of helping him on the relative level as well.
I mean, Krishna doesn't say, "Oh, this war is useless. Go, realize yourself." No, Krishna is like, "You're a warrior. You've been trained as a warrior. The objective of you fighting is legit. So do what you have to do. That's fair. That way." Everybody would love to wriggle out of their responsibility. No? Everybody. I mean, humans are basically, sorry, but majorly lazy, you know. We love free lunch. We love free gifts. We love free stuff, you know. So, no, we have to put in the work.
Yeah, that's good thing for us all to remember. We also live in this like world and it's so fast paced right now. You know, I think, you know, when we look at it, how we, you know, you talked about perception before when we, before we started recording, like how we perceive these teachings that are so from another time. We live in such a fast paced world. So of course we're going to perceive these teachings and kind of pull out the, let's get the fast track, you know, like we're in the self-help era. Like, give me the book with the checklist and the to-do list. And, you know, it's like, it's just kind of the environment that we live in.
Hacks,
Hacks.
hacks,
Yes. Like, where are the yogic hacks?
five
I'm sh
hacks, yeah.
yeah. I'm sure there's like a book somewhere of like yoga
Sure.
hacks for the fast track to self-realization. Well, I mean, I guess there is no fast track. That's the whole point, right?
Yeah, and sometimes if you want a fast track, it can take you behind where you started, behind from where you started. You know, it's like it's something like mountain climbing, you know. If you rush, if you're not aware, mindful with every step, you might tumble and roll down the cliff, and then you'll have to start again. It's like that.
Like, I know it's not a hack, but like, when we think of, okay, how to apply these teachings to our lives, of course, having a teacher, a guide, a guru, someone there helping to put the pillars in place, I think. I don't know if you would say it's essential, but I feel like for me as someone like, you know, I have ADHD, so I'm like, whoa, like all over there. Like I kind of need that discipline, and from there's a sense of freedom. But if we're like thinking about the listeners, it's like, okay, I hear what you're saying, these concepts or these spiritual practices that are kind of big in a way, like how do I practically apply them day to day.
Find if you can find a teacher. I mean, I don't see why there is a resistance to finding a teacher in yoga and spirituality. When we have teachers, consultants, mentors for everything that we do in life. We've gone to school, we have had a number of teachers. We consult with parents or friends or confidants. Many of us have therapists. Many of us go to doctors for consultation. So if it's normal to consult someone for these empirical matters, then why not consult somebody for spiritual matters? What is so unfamiliar about it? So if you could, if you can, find a teacher. Find a teacher who understands you, find a teacher who can tailor-make programs, practices for you.
What do you think the hesitation is there for people to find a spiritual teacher or?
It's the fracas that is created around the whole mist that has been created around spiritual teachers. Doesn't have to be like that. Spiritual teachers can be extremely practical, but the whole spiritual mumbo jumbo through which that teacher has to filter. And then people have ideas. No, my teacher should have long beard and white hair and should be living in a cave in Himalayas. And then they go to find their teacher and look under every rock if they are finding some yogi who is meditating. No, a spiritual guide can be found anywhere, anywhere, literally anywhere. And ideally, you will find a spiritual guide who does not fit into the mold that you desire. And that itself will be one big lesson. It's something like many of us, while growing up, teenagers or whatever, we have this idea of ideal partner. I want a boyfriend who looks like this, and I want a girlfriend who looks like this. And then you grow up, and then you're like, okay, that was a fantasy, but now I want a practical person to be with, somebody I can grow old with. And then you may not look for a tall, dark, and handsome person, but you become a little practical and things like that. So it's really like that.
What
It's
was your
need-based, need-based. It's like, what am I looking at? And teachers may change. Maybe you start by being dedicated to an asana teacher and work under that teacher for some time. And then as you get refined under that teacher, find another teacher that takes you to a more refined perspective. And that's okay.
What was your experience of finding your teacher or meeting your teacher?
I've had a few teachers who I found and I met. Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much to talk about it and how to talk about it, but to come back to our point, it's not like you found a teacher and yay, I found my guru or whatever. It's not like that, It's okay, you found your teacher, now what? Just finding your teacher is not like a box that you've ticked. Okay, I found my guru. No, the journey starts there. I found my teacher, then the commitment, then the faith, then the dedication, and then the tests that the actual guru will put you through. All these things will see if you are ready for studentship. It's not just about finding a teacher and then, yay, I found a teacher. It's not like that. Finding the teacher is the first step. And then the actual experience of studentship, dedication, faith, it's a process. And somehow it's really like a process of finding a partner. Let's say you meet somebody in the party and you like that person. Okay, now what are you going to do? It's like that, Oh, I met the person of my dreams. Okay, fine. Now what? Call him, call her, or text her, or whatever, initiate a date or say hi, and then you meet, and then maybe once you meet, you'll be like, no. We have completely different tastes. So bye-bye, only date. It's that back and forth here as well. Like there are some teachers who are great with knowledge, but they are not so good with passing the knowledge. Not all intelligent, not all wise teachers are good orators or good teachers. So that is also there. Not all teachers are compassionate. So teachers come in multiple shades. You have to see what kind of vibe you go along with.
I guess it goes
It's a
back to what
very,
you were
very
saying.
deeply personal experience. It's very personal experience.
That, we are kind of lazy people that we're just like, I want the teacher, I want the guru, but like you're saying, like it takes, or even when you were speaking, I was thinking, I'm not sure which scripture it's in, but that's That kind of idea or that metaphor that you take one step towards guru, you can say teacher, God on your path, and guru takes 1,000 steps towards you. But that's only, like you said, the beginning, you know? And then it's like we keep taking the steps. We have to keep taking the effort. And that comes to my next question when, okay, I know it's not linear, but say we do get the teacher or we do take that step onto this path. I'm ready. Like there's whether it's the suffering of the world, for many people, it's something that dramatic happens in life that causes one to sort of turn inward and question the reality of this whole waking state existence. But then it's like, then the practice is, of course, lived. And also inside meditation, like, can you shed some light onto those practices of stillness, of silence?
Okay, so just tracing the line of thought that we came out of, a teacher. Okay, so let's say you have a teacher. The teacher will give you knowledge, but the teacher may not give you realization per se. Okay, because again, it is your own subjective experience. The teacher can guide you. Like you can go to a philosophy teacher and learn philosophy, but that doesn't mean anything in the internal geography of your spirituality. You know, you may be master of all the six philosophies, but you may be a very, very arrogant, proud person. You know, so there are two parts to it: your intellectual understanding or intellectual knowledge and inner wisdom. Intellectual knowledge ideally could lead to inner wisdom, but there's no guarantee. It's like that. And therefore, no matter how great your teacher is, it ultimately boils down to how you do your sadhana. It's your faith, it's your dedication, it's your diligence with your practice is what will make you as a you. So, I mean, you have a self-realized master as your guru, but if you don't have the capability of putting in the works, then things are not going to move for you. And therefore, practice, as we call it, is extremely important. Again, you can say these are the two wings of the bird of self-realization. Getting that theoretical knowledge and also putting in that effort to awaken internally. So both have to be balanced.
And I guess also we have to have that mumukshutva, that desire within to truly, truly be free. Because without that, it's like, why do it? And then it goes back to the point, like you said, it's not meant for the masses. It's meant for the one who truly desires freedom, which is not everybody, and that's fine.
Absolutely. It's meant for everybody, but not everybody is meant for it in a way, you know. You understand what I'm trying to say? Spiritual realization is for everybody, but everybody is not capable for it. They have to train for it. Like everybody would love to be a billionaire, but not everybody would. I mean, if given a choice, do you want a lot of money or do you want to be poor? I think most people will go, I want to have money, right? So everybody would love to be a billionaire, but not everybody wants to put in the works to be a billionaire. It's like that. Same with spirituality. Oh, I would love to be self-realized. Oh, I have to meditate 18 hours a day. No, I would rather, you know, binge watch something on Netflix, kind of, you know. So it really comes to that, but that happens. Just by sticking to your practice, everything will unfold in its own time.
I guess then it goes back to exactly what you said at the beginning, like it's about the refinement of the mind. And it's kind of that simple, and yet it doesn't seem so simple at all, that always. But if we can just put our attention on that refinement, it seems like it brings a little more spaciousness into this day-to-day life.
What I want to specifically mention here is there's immense need to be patient with our own journey. And that's why real spiritual development will happen only when you stop looking at it as a project. That's what I believe, okay? I have no scriptural citation for this. But I believe that when you stop looking at spirituality as one more project to fuel one's ego, it finds its own pace. Natural, effortless growth happens. But if you look at, no, I want to be self-realized in 7 years, it's like I want to be a vice president of an organization in 5 years, like a corporate ladder kind of thing. It will not happen. There is a tremendous importance of ease, effortlessness, joy, lightness in spirituality, which usually gets missed because most spiritual enthusiasts look at spirituality as one more project, one more feather in the cap, one more variable to mollycoddle their ego. Once your spirituality becomes as natural, as effortless, as organic as breathing, existing, bathing, living, eating, then you will not say, I am spiritual or I practice spirituality. Never.
Yeah, it seems like it's just become, it permeates life. It's like there is no separation or distinction. Like, this is my sadhana, or this is my spiritual time. It's
Correct.
like that starts to permeate how the world is perceived. And
Absolutely.
that perception starts to sort of clear the vision. It's like, again, that analogy I love of just clearing the mirror and the. Yes, the fog is cleared away. So I love that.
Absolutely. 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 You're right.
So I think we've come full circle back to that
Man.
essential point of just refining the mind, not just as a life's work, as a work, and yet as an effortless flow down the river of that awareness, which I know that you live, and I love that. So, yeah, before we wrap up, like, is there anything you feel like we didn't really touch on today, or it's like how you feel, had any last final
No, it was a
words?
beautiful conversation. We traced many different dimensions, so it was great. But I just want to just as a parting note to the listeners, I would just say just be good to yourself. Just be patient with yourself. Don't be obsessed about your spirituality. Don't take it so seriously. Take it sincerely, but not seriously. Because the more effort you feel in your spirituality, the more the naturalness of it will be lost. And spirituality is the most natural way of living because we are ultimately spiritual beings in human form. So just be gentle with yourself. Have some self-compassion. Be patient. Do what you ought to do spiritually, practically, and things will reveal, things will present themselves in their own time.
I'll take that advice in myself also. And so just to wrap up, I love to ask three last questions. This is actually going to be the last episode of this season, so I think it's
Oh, wow.
you're going to
Okay.
nail these three questions. So firstly, describe your personal sadhana in three words.
So I just need to silence and surrender.
Beautiful. Love that. And this a scripture or a book or text that's inspiring your practice right now.
Bhagavad Gita, I would say it's good for everyone.
And finally, sum up this conversation in one sentence, which I actually think you just did, but once more.
Relax. That's
Nice. Yes.
it.
Let go of the paddling up the boat, and I
Yeah.
feel when I chat with you, Prasad, I'm just cruising down the river, and that's a wonderful feeling. So, and just
Thank you
before
so much.
we sign off, what's next for you? Is there anywhere that the listeners can study with you or practice with you? I know people are always asking. People have asked me many times, do you know, can I take a course with Prasad? What's going on? What's coming
Yeah,
up?
just follow me on Instagram. That's more or less the only social media channel that I'm on. And whatever I do, I have a course coming up, I think in February, online course, and I'll post everything about that over there, and they can join if they feel
Super
like.
cool. Super cool. Well, thank you so much. I hope
Thank
you
you so
have
much,
a.
Bobby. It's always a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed what you heard, please consider supporting the show at patreon.com/acuriousyogipodcast. And please leave a review. It really helps the show reach more people. Let's stay curious, connected, and keep walking the path together. In total delight, this is Bobby signing off until next time.